KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting the new 2024 RAV4 with on- and off-the-road versatility and up to a 262-mile range with gas, hybrid, and plug-in options available. Visit your Toyota dealer for more. San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. For today's Arts and Culture Show, we're talking with sci-fi author Nnedi Okorafor. Then we'll tell you about the Swifty Book Club and your weekend preview. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. Author Nnedi Okorafor talks about merging sci-fi with spirituality in her new book, She Who Knows, coming out Tuesday.
When I write science fiction, I'm writing from a very African point of view, and I've always done that.
Plus, we'll talk about a new Taylor Swift book club at the San Diego Central Library, then all of your arts events in the weekend preview. That's ahead on Midday Edition. Science fiction, fantasy, and West African spirituality all come together in She Who Knows, Nnedi Okorafor's upcoming novella. The book follows 13-year-old Najiba, the first girl in her village to experience the call to the salt roads. She Who Knows is the first in a trilogy. It's also a prequel to Okorafor's award-winning 2010 novel, Who Fears Death? Okorafor is a very prolific author, with two Hugos, two Lodestars, a Nebula, World Fantasy, and Eisner Award under her belt. She was recently inducted into the Science Fiction and Fantasy Hall of Fame. She has many things in the works, and she joins me now to talk about some of them. Nnedi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So glad to have you here. I mean, the last time we spoke, you were in San Diego to talk about your book, Who Fears Death? What have you been up to since then? Sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I've been up to a lot. I like writing. I like storytelling. So I do it a lot. And so, yeah, I've had several books and novellas and things come out since then. And I've got a lot coming up.
All right. Well, now much of your writing is categorized as science fiction and centers around your Nigerian roots and spirituality. Can you talk a bit about that and how all of these concepts, sci-fi and spirituality, really come together in your stories?
Yeah. So I'm Nigerian American. Both of my parents are Igbo. And so like from a young age, they've been taking my siblings and me back to Nigeria to reconnect with family, all of that. And those were really pivotal. Those trips were very, very pivotal to me. So where I had the American upbringing, I also had this understanding and love and push-pull and experience with, you know, Nigerian culture. So that's always been significant to me. So once I started writing, it just came forth. It came forth in a very strong way. It was intuitive. It wasn't something I tried to do on purpose. It was just those were the stories that I started telling. They were set in Nigeria. A lot of them first started as sort of memoir pieces, but they were things that happened in Nigeria during those trips. So that's how it started. And so like I like connected very closely to especially Nigerian, particularly Igbo cosmologies and culture and spiritual beliefs early on, very early on. The science fiction aspect was a few years after I started writing. And that also has a deep connection to Nigeria. I mean, I started writing science fiction because of Nigeria. It wasn't because I was inspired by classic science fiction and I wanted to do something different. Not that at all. It was Nigeria.
Yeah. Well, do you feel like spirituality is very much a part of science fiction and the science fiction you write?
Certainly in the science fiction that I write, I think science fiction as a whole, yeah. I mean, it's like science fiction is in a lot of ways, a reflection of humanity, and that spirituality, no matter what culture you're coming from, it's going to show up. It's going to manifest in various ways. And so when I write science fiction, I'm writing from a very African point of view. And I've always done that. That was a natural thing. And if we're talking about worldviews, we're talking about, you know, of course, Africa is a continent. It's not a country. So, and I'm generalizing here, But if we're talking about an African point of view, typically that includes the spiritual, the spiritual, the mystical is with the mundane. They coexist, they commingle. So when I write science fiction, that's what happens. You're gonna get iterations of the future, yes, but you're gonna also see mystical things happening in the future. It's just a natural thing. It's not something that I feel like I have to bring to science fiction. It is literally the type of science fiction that I write.
Wow. And much of that, all of it, comes through in your book. So I want to talk about She Who Knows. Readers might recognize Najiba as the mother from your last book, Who Fears Death. Now we're diving into her coming of age story. What inspired you to write it?
Oh, yes. I've wanted to write Najiba's story for many years. Like even after writing Who Fears Death, because Who Fears Death, it started as two novels. It was big. It was massive. And I kind of brought it all together while keeping the narrative the same. And it took me 2 years to do this. I brought it all together into one book. So in those two books, especially in the beginning, you get a lot of Najiba's story. So I already knew her background. I already knew like who she was, and I wanted to tell that story. Like it was, because I'm attracted to good stories. I'm attracted to stories that are alive. And over the years, I knew I was going to write it. I knew I was going to write her story. I was always talking about it. And over the years, I found myself even talking about her as if I'd already written the story. So I knew I was going to write it. And then one day I just did. You know, it's like a lot of times for me, it's not a matter of whether I'll do it or not. It's just a matter of when. I always know it's going to come. I don't worry about it. It eventually just, it comes. And so, yeah, I sat down and just wrote it. And I'm so happy that I did.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah. I mean, and there aren't many narratives out there about, you know, powerful middle-aged African women. Talk to me about the importance of Najiba's story in that.
Yeah, there are many things. First, Najiba goes through in Who Fears Death, and the very origins of our main character in Who Fears Death, who's Onye Sonwu, and her name means Who Fears Death. The origins of her is trauma, you know, and Najiba goes through it. And one of the things that was really important about Najiba's character in Who Fears Death is that she goes through this vicious trauma, and she gives birth to this amazing child. And then all of these things happen because of it. But that trauma does not, it doesn't make her small. And two, she has a whole story, a whole life out, you know, despite all of the things that happened to her. So that was important. And then when it comes to middle-aged women doing amazing things and having adventures, you know, I just realized I don't really see much of that. Mm-hmm. I don't see much of that. And you know, she Who Knows, Fire Spitter, the first novella is about when in her teenage years. But the second is when she's in her 40s. And I think that it just makes sense. And it's for me as a writer, like I haven't written too many characters from that point of view. And it bothers me. Mm-hmm. I thought about that. I thought hard about that. I'm like, why haven't I written those characters? But I'm really happy to write, because I think seeing women in these roles and seeing their complexity and their power and their flaws and their journeys, I think it's really important.
Right. I mean, and we get to see Najiba really navigate cultural norms. Like we said, you know, she's the first girl in her village to have the call, something that only boys and men have experienced so far. She's stubborn, though, and doesn't let that stop her from going on this trip to Mine Salt. Talk about the fallout from defying those norms and what she contended with.
Yeah, it's so she does that. She breaks a major cultural norm. But see, the difference is with this one, she doesn't get, like in a story typically about something like that, that she's going to have to fight her family. She's going to have to fight everybody around her. Her father is like, okay, that's unusual, but all right, I guess they're going. Her brothers, you know, her brothers have to work through it as well. And I thought that aspect was really, really important. But yeah, she pushes through all of these things, and she pushes through her journey, and she's really she's a unique type of character in that in this patriarchal society, but she doesn't let it hold her down. And when she gets the call, she heeds it, despite all of the structure around her of patriarchy. And she does it with this grace that even surprised me as the writer, you know? She does it with this grace where it's like, she's unapologetic in who she is. She's really strong. She's really strong. And I'm not talking about the type of character who can, who can lift cars and beat people up. She's just really emotionally strong. And she experiences fear, she experiences doubt, all of those things, but she pushes through. And I love that.
Wow. Well, She Who Knows is also the start of a trilogy. And of course, world building is an important part of any sci-fi fantasy story. How are you building on the world here?
Yeah. So when I build world, which I don't even know if I could call it building, it's almost like something grows. And so when I'm writing these things, I don't outline when I write. I don't, most of the time, I don't even know what I'm going to write when I sit down to write it. But when it comes to the worlds that the stories are set in, once they're in my head, it's just a matter of imagining I'm there and then just looking around. So that's how I understand it. And so with this world, because I've written about it, so Who Fears Death was the first book that I wrote that was in this world. And then we've got the prequel sort of, it's 500 years before everything in Who Fears Death happens. And it's called The Book of Phoenix. And so that was understanding the world that much more. So each time I write these things, that world becomes richer and richer and richer. I know the technologies, I know the creatures, I know the locations. There's certain locations I return to. There's certain locations that I now know the deep history of, how it got there, what happened, where the great book is from, all of that. So I've learned in writing these books, I've come to understand those things. And there's something about when you write a novel and you edit that thing 50, 60 times, it gets very solid in your mind. It's solid. So each time I return to this world, it just becomes more, and I know it very, very well. And then with She Who Knows, it's like I was learning and fleshing out all these things. It's like I was walking through and I'm like, oh, that's where that comes from. Oh, that's what that means. So it just becomes more and more with each book.
Wow. Well, you know, a few years ago, you coined the term African futurism, and there's a distinction between that and Afrofuturism. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. There are two terms that I coined. There's African Jujuism and African futurism. So African Jujuism, I kind of already talked about it. African Jujuism is a subcategory of fantasy that respectfully acknowledges the seamless blend of true existing African spiritualities and cosmologies with the imaginative. So it's like they're playing, and that's very much where She Who Knows lies. African futurism, it's similar to Afrofuturism in the way that the stories connect, you know, the stories and the spirit and history and the future connect blood as well. But the difference with African futurism is that it's specifically and more directly rooted in African culture, history, mythology, and point of view as it then branches out into the Black diaspora. So the diaspora is very connected. It is part of African futurism, but it's more about where it started and how it branched out. So there's a core, and the core is very African. It's very African. So that's what African futurism is.
All right. Gets back to the roots. Who Fears Death is currently being adapted into a series by HBO, which I have been excited about for a while. I know you can't say much, but what can you share about that?
Oh, I can't say much, unfortunately. There isn't much on that I can say.
Okay. All right. Well, my fingers are crossed that we see that soon. Well, what's next for the genre you've really coined here, African futurist and African Jujuist stories in general?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of things coming up. So I've got, you know, the She Who Knows She Who Knows trilogy, and then we've got Death of the Author, and then I also have a graphic novel coming out in the summer, summer of 2025, and it's called The Space Cat. And yes, it is about a space cat. It's about my cat. And it's so cute. And
what's
it's
your
so
cat's
fun.
Name?
His name is Periwinkle.
Okay.
I can't even. But yeah, it's about a space cat. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to read about that. And I've still got my fingers crossed that some of these stories, all of them really, yeah, get adapted into an on-screen show or series. So we'll see.
Yes, working on that. I've got several that are in development and in various stages. So yes, keep your fingers crossed.
Will do. All right. I've been speaking with Nnedi Okorafor, author of She Who Knows. Nnedi, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Up next, if you're a Taylor Swift fan, the San Diego Central Library has a book club just for you.
And so each month we are going to pick a book that she has referenced in one or more of her songs, and we're going to read that book through the lens of Taylor Swift.
Hear about the Swiftie Book Club when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their healthcare to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. If you've ever wanted to know about the literary inspirations behind Taylor Swift's songs, well, now is your chance to explore that. The San Diego Central Library kicked off its Swiftie Book Club on Monday, and KPBS arts reporter Beth Accomando spoke with library assistant Craig Wimberly, the driving force behind the Swiftie Book Club, and Deputy Director of Customer Experience, Jennifer Jenkins, to talk about the library's efforts to engage with the community. Here's that conversation.
I am here at the Downtown San Diego Library, and before we start talking about your Swiftie Club, I do have to make a full confession. I am not a Swiftie. I would probably fail a test to identify her songs. I am sort of stepping out of my comfort zone to do this, but one thing, I really love fandom wherever it occurs and people who are passionate about things. So tell us what inspired you to set up a Swiftie Book Club and to tap into that kind of passion of her fans.
Honestly, it's just an excuse to talk about Taylor Swift. My two biggest passions in life are the library and probably Taylor Swift. My boss, Mark Cherry, got a whiff of that fairly recently, and he was like, why aren't you doing any programs that have anything to do with Taylor Swift? You love her so much. And after some mulling it over, I realized that I could start a book club because I've been meaning to read more. And I was like, what better way to do that than to read the books that she's referenced in her work? Because she makes a lot of literary references in her work. And so I want to learn more about the context in which she's writing.
And Jennifer, how did you feel about this project?
I was thrilled because I came out as a Swiftie. I'm a late in life Swiftie. And I work on our podcast, the San Diego Public Library Listeners Advisory Podcast. And we have this segment called Q Time that was new for this season, where we talk about what we're reading, watching, and listening to, myself and the co-host. And I racked my brain. I tried to come up with something like, you know, I wanted to sound really academic, really intelligent, really like, you know, like a connoisseur of literature and music. And then I was like, I'm only listening to Taylor Swift right now. I'm only watching the Errors movie. I'm going to tell my truth. So I shared about that. And then it spread like wildfire, I think. And so I think I helped create an environment where all of us Swifties could be ourselves at work and find each other and have this thing in common. But also, it gave us opportunity to start talking about all of the little connections and context and how those correlations in the music and in the fandom related to what we do day in and day out as librarians.
So explain what the Swiftie Book Club is going to be. What can people expect from this? What are you going to be presenting?
So we're going to pick a book each month. The first one will be The Great Gatsby. Essentially, for those who are not familiar, Taylor Swift likes to weave in literary references into her work. Well, she references a lot of things, but a lot of book references. And so each month we are going to pick a book that she has referenced in one or more of her songs. And we're going to read that book through the lens of Taylor Swift. So I'm going at The Great Gatsby and thinking about what about it inspired Taylor Swift. And then when we get to the book club, I'll be playing clips of the songs that she's referenced.
It was so nice throwing big parties, jumping to the pool from the balcony. Everyone's swimming in a champagne sea. No rules when you show up here. Bass beat rattling the chandelier. Feeling so Gatsby for that whole year. So why'd you have to rain on my parade? I'm shaking my head and locking the gates. This is why we can't have nice.
We'll essentially just talk about each of our experiences with the book and the context and the experience we've gained.
You mentioned that The Great Gatsby is going to be the first book in the Swiftie Club. What other books can people expect to pop up in this series?
So that's the fun thing. There are many to choose from. I have an entire spreadsheet of like references and books to choose from. But I think depending on the community's interest, I'm going to leave it up to them. We might do a poll every month. But some of the options are things like The Scarlet Letter, Romeo and Juliet. But some more modern interpretations or selections might be a book called Furious Love, which is about Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, which is a referenced in some of her songs. So there's going to be a little bit of everything.
And what is the importance of kind of the library's role in the community in terms of, you know, there's so much stuff available on the internet now. So how do you get people to kind of return to the library and kind of make it a physical space or a virtual space for people to come to? And how does this book club kind of fit into that?
Ooh, I can take this one. Okay, so I found myself at a dinner with a bunch of like bigwig library directors from across the country about a year ago. And if you're not familiar, the Brooklyn Public Library had an exhibit of all of Jay-Z's ephemera, things from his entire career, everything from his archives. That was a huge deal, and I was so jealous. And the director of that library was at this dinner, and so everyone was very buttoned up, and they were talking business. And then finally, I couldn't take it anymore, and I was like, I'm sorry, please tell me about Jay-Z. Like, tell me everything. Like, about what did he wear? What did he smell like? Did you meet Beyonce? Did you meet the children? Like, please tell me about the exhibit. And we had this really fascinating conversation about the fact that libraries, we're not super great at telling our story, and we're not super great at, like, well, we shout from the rooftops about how great libraries are and everything that we have to offer, but sometimes there's a disconnect with the general public in terms of connecting with the resources at the library. But one thing that we have a commonality with everyone is that we too are immersed in fandom, immersed in pop culture, and using that as a vehicle to connect with our community and kind of lower, like, to remove barriers so that it's not as intimidating. Like, after I did that podcast episode, I had people coming up to me to say, I'm so glad that you talked about, you know, the music that you listen to and the things that you're reading and watching, because, you know, it made me feel better about myself because I don't always read, you know, Tolkien or whatever. And I was like, we don't either. We have a variety of interests. We are the community. And so pop culture and fandom is one way that we can connect with our communities and draw them in so that they can learn about all of the great things that we do here and all the resources that we have.
And another facet is that the world is so expensive these days. One of the main ways to get like Swiftie community is the Eras Tour. And if you've not been living under a rock, you know that the Eras Tour can cost $10,000. And one of my favorite things about the library is that it's one of the last public places where you get to exist for free. I want to be part of creating a place for these communities. I want people to be able to go and connect with people for free about things they love.
And in prepping for this book club, have you like uncovered anything that you weren't aware of or that really sparked your interest in terms of the connections between her songs and some literature?
So when I've been reading The Great Gatsby, I have uncovered the obvious references. They're the main one being that in This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things on Reputation, she says feeling so Gatsby. Like, that's a very obvious callback to the book. But even just reading the first few chapters of The Great Gatsby, there's like one of the first ways he describes Gatsby is gorgeous, and that's another Taylor Swift song. And so it's just so interesting to read this book and like imagine how she took it in, and then even just the not as obvious connections become more obvious as I go through. And so that's been interesting. It makes the music experience and the book experience more enriched.
Hiding my obsession, I once was poison ivy, but now I'm your Daisy.
And you have a display out here in the library, and you mentioned that there is a standee of Taylor Swift that is from the children's book section, and her biography is out all the time now?
Yes, so there's a children's biography series in which she's one of the subjects, and they can't seem to keep it on the shelves. It's just checked out constantly. It's on hold. It's reserved. And so they said, please take her upstairs. The children are disappointed that they can't get their hands on her book. So that was really cute.
This obviously taps into a particular fandom. One of the things I remember when my son was young was when mangas started to be popular and started to be a part of the library and like a very popular item.
Manga and anime are definitely still a thing. I have a 15-year-old, and that is specifically what she comes to the Teen Center here at Central Library to look for and check out. One thing that I think that people don't necessarily think top of mind about when they are thinking about libraries is gaming. I think game culture has really taken off in the library world, not only gaming systems, electronic games, but tabletop games, Dungeons and Dragons. We have a lot of D&D programs throughout the system. So slowly but surely, we're finding different ways to find these niche things that are beloved by people in the community, and then figure out a way to incorporate that into library programs and services and in our collections. But it's a lot to stay on top of.
And talk a little bit about what you see the role of the library in the community is. What kind of things do you want to see the library doing to try and attract people?
So I like to keep top of mind our vision, which is opportunity, discovery, and inspiration. So anytime we get to be a place for any of those things makes me a happy camper. And I think that creating programming like this gives the people the opportunity to connect with each other, gives them more knowledge than they maybe didn't have before. I know a lot of people these days, they have this idea of when they were a kid that the library is still just like very quiet stacks with a shushy kind of librarian, and then they come in or they're told about all of these resources that we have, or they find out about programs, or like Jennifer said, they hear that we like the same things they do and they just get so excited, and that inspires them and helps them do what they need to do in their time. They get to be more creative or connected, and I think that's our role in the community.
I would say pop culture and fandom also plays a big role in our makerspaces. We have pop culture days, Pokemon days, Star Wars, Star Trek, our Idea Lab that's here on the fourth floor, and then we have 13 Idea Labs in the whole system and more to come. That's another way that you can kind of make some of those machines like the laser cutter, 3D printers, things that may seem intimidating and folks may be wary of learning how to use those machines and those materials. When we have pop culture days, it gives people the opportunity to come in with a really fun and easy craft or activity or something that they are actually getting skills and learning how to use the equipment at the same time that they're celebrating their fandom, Pokemon, you name it.
That was KPBS's Beth Accomando speaking with Library Assistant Craig Wimberly and Deputy Director of Customer Experience Jennifer Jenkins. The Swifty Book Club will meet virtually and in person every third Monday at the San Diego Central Library. Still ahead, ways to immerse yourself in art this weekend.
These works are just also really lovely to look at, as well as thought-provoking. So this should be a really fascinating set of exhibits in one place.
KPBS Midday Edition returns after the break.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. For our weekend preview, we have art inspired by DNA and survival, piano music, a special book event, and lots of music. Joining me with all the details is KPBS arts editor and producer Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, welcome.
Hey, Jade. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. So first up, we have visual art inspired by DNA forensics. Tell me about this one.
Right. So this is at the Institute of Contemporary Art San Diego at their North Campus in Encinitas. And it's actually, there's two exhibits both opening this weekend, one by Melissa Walter and one by Manuel Alejandro Rodriguez Delgado. The first, let's talk about Rodriguez Delgado. He is a Puerto Rican-born artist. He's now based in New Mexico. And his work is inspired by Star Trek, the U.S. space program, and also, I love this part, Puerto Rico's unsuccessful bid to host the Olympic Games. The bid happened in the late 80s, and it was for the 2004 Olympic Games. Their slogan was, "We can do it." And what he does is he makes these self-contained survival systems. He uses repurposed and found materials like woods, even electronics. And Melissa Walter, she is a local artist, and her works are often really science-informed. She works on paper and paper sculptures, and this exhibit, which is based on DNA forensics, is something that she started a couple of years ago. And I talked to her this week and asked her a little bit about how she got started with that.
So the body of work began with sort of learning about DNA analysis and the history of it and its history within forensic science. And so the pieces that I made at that time were really focused on sort of the progression of that technology and how that was evolving. But then over time, as I was making new work, I was still interested in that topic, but I was starting to think about it a little more from a psychological perspective of the people that might have been affected by the lack of DNA analysis in the, you know, progression of their lives or the presence of DNA analysis.
So Melissa Walter, she takes this data, numbers, and processes, and she translates them into visual elements. Like one of her pieces is a series of watercolor dots, like little black dots on paper. And they're smudged, and that smudging kind of represents the messiness of early DNA processes in forensics. There were a lot of mistakes. There's not a lot of exactness. And in one of the pieces, which is the furthest along in the progression of the technology, she talked to a scientist who's developing this really advanced AI process for DNA science that can actually draw a picture of what someone looks like based on the tiniest DNA from a piece of gum on the floor, a strand of hair. And that work of art, it kind of interprets the decision tree for the technology when it figures out eye color. And this piece of art actually has a mirror in it, which is very implicating. I hate to think about all of the pieces of hair and skin cells that are just floating around.
In there, yeah.
And Melissa Walter is a designer by trade. She's worked for NASA and other science fields in graphic design. So she's not only really scientifically skilled, but she also has this great eye for visual harmonics and visual beauty. So, yeah, these works are just also really lovely to look at as well as thought-provoking. So this should be a really fascinating set of exhibits in one place.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I'm really impressed how science and art are merged together in this exhibit. So that is fascinating. But alongside those exhibits, there is a ceramic sale, music, and a big family-friendly art-making event. And it's all happening in North County. Sounds like a big party. So what do you know about that?
So yeah, the whole event starts at 4. They have a found art and clay project where kids can make their own little survival systems inspired by Rodriguez Delgado's exhibit. There's a ceramic sale set out the entire time, food and drink, and both artists will be there to give tours of their exhibitions. And those tours start at 5 o'clock. And out in the garden, there is live music from a really great local band, Please Ask for Paul. We're listening to their latest single right now. It's called Ghost.
All right, so that's Saturday at ICA San Diego in Encinitas. If you're looking for classical music, though, you can find it at La Jolla Music Society Summer Fest. It's still in full swing, and you have a recommendation this weekend, right?
Right. So Summerfest is a month-long festival of chamber music, so small ensembles. And Friday night's event, Counterpoint 2, with Conrad Tau and his tap dancing collaborator, Caleb Tyker. That is at the top of my radar, but it's sold out. So the next best thing is Conrad Tau playing piano. This concert is called California Dreamin', and it's something that Tau has curated. It's a selection of Rachmaninoff's music that has roots in California. And this is something that just blows my mind. Like, I had no idea that Rachmaninoff lived in California for a little bit, off and on. And then he spent the last couple of years of his life in Beverly Hills until his death in 1943. And this, we're listening to Conrad Tau playing from Rachmaninoff's 13 Preludes. And they're also doing some more pieces with strings and chamber ensembles, all by composers who also have ties to California or its sound. And yeah, and Summerfest continues through August 24th.
Lovely.
Lots to check out.
Yeah. I love the music. Well, Cleopatra is a new play opening this weekend at Moxie, a world premiere adaptation of Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra. What do you know about this?
I am excited about this one. This is a co-production with Moxie Theater and Loud Fridge Theater Group. And it's adapted by and starring Joy Yvonne Jones, who is a former San Diegan. And she has adapted this to use modern language, projections, choreography, and music. And it's even interactive. But what is exciting to me is how this is going to be carried by the skills and the creativity of someone like Joy Yvonne Jones. It digs into Cleopatra's story, who's this tragic Egyptian queen and famous for being Julius Caesar's lover and the wife of Mark Antony, but this is her story, so it's very exciting. Opening night is tonight, and it's on stage through August 26th. And with this production, Moxie's debuting a new accessible ticketing program. So it's called EquiTicket, and a quarter of every night's tickets will be available with a choose-your-own-price model. And they also always have a $20 rush ticket available in person at the box office an hour before the show. So if you are flexible, you can go with the flow. You can just show up an hour before.
Well, that's fantastic. The option is there. Okay, so KPBS is actually hosting a special event this weekend. The announcement of the One Book, One San Diego selections for 2024. Tell us about Booked for the Weekend.
I love that title, first of all.
It is nice.
So this event is Saturday from 11 to 2, and they're going to make the announcement of what this year's picks are right at 11 in the Neil Morgan Auditorium, which is the downstairs auditorium at the Central Library downtown. And you can pick up copies of each of those selections. And the first 300 guests actually get one of the selected books as a free gift. And yeah, if you don't know what One Book, One San Diego is, it's a program where we select three books, one for adults, one for teens, one for children, and a Spanish language versions as well. The idea is to get everybody in San Diego reading together. And also in this special launch event, they're going to have a bunch of booths from libraries and local presses and literary organizations that's out in the outdoor courtyard right there. And at 12:30, there's going to be a panel discussion about ways to use the One Book program, whether in the classroom or at home, to work on literacy and reading.
Yeah, it really is a fantastic program and holds so much value. Speaking of books, tonight is the third Thursday, which means it's Verbatim Books' monthly Sunset Reading Hang session.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
This is called Books in the Park, and it's from 5:30 to 7:30 at Bird Park in North Park, which has a really great view of the city, of the Coronado Bridge. You can see Balboa Park. It's really great. And you can also just stick your nose in a book. So people will come, they'll bring blankets and chairs, and you can bring your own book, or Verbatim will often have set out little baskets of books for you to pick from. You can mingle and stuff at first and meet other people, but then from 6 to 7, it's the silent reading hour.
Okay.
So I love that there is an event where it forces you to just get quiet and focus on your book. So yeah, it's a great opportunity to get out in the community, meet like-minded people, but also just
I tell you what, we could all use that kind of time. Silent for reading. It's great. All right. Well, something I'm excited about, this weekend marks the 65th anniversary of Kind of Blue, the masterpiece album by Miles Davis. And some local jazz greats are coming to the Ready Shell to really commemorate this.
Mm-hmm. So this is Gilbert Castellanos, who's our very own local jazz trumpet legend. And he's going to be playing with his all-star band through the album. So yeah, just lots of legendary level stuff going on. So this is at the Shell on Saturday night, celebrating Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. And if you get there early, you can hear Young Lions Jazz Conservatory students do a pre-show set. This is a school run by Gilbert Castellanos, and if you've never heard them play, it's mind-blowing. They are so talented. So it's worth getting there early.
And it's great. I could listen to this song play just all day long. But, all right, I know we've got to get on to our next event. And so in keeping with live music for a little bit longer here, what else is on your radar this weekend?
All right. First, Friday night at the Observatory, former locals, the rock band Cults, they're coming back to town. And opening for them is Bunny. And this is a project of Jessica Viscius from Chicago. I love her sound. Her songwriting is full of grief and humor and romance. This is Bunny's latest single. It's called Good Stuff.
Just to remember the first time you said you loved me. Text me at 2 a.m.
That is Friday night at the Observatory. And then on Saturday, the Marias and Automatic are playing at Cal Coast Credit Union Open Air Amphitheater. The Marias are indie rockers. They sing in English and in Spanish. And they just put out a new album, which is really great. It's called Submarine. This is a track called Lejos de Ti. And one more on Saturday is Talib Kweli, who is an incredible rapper and playing with local Riston Diggs, Sante Prince, and also local Rick Scales. This is at Music Box. And Talib Kweli, he's from Brooklyn. He just released this track with J. Rawls. It's called To the Ghetto. So he has been making music for a while, really great stuff. But be sure to get there in time to catch Rick Scales, because he's always fantastic too.
Love it.
And finally, on Sunday, there is a nice rootsy Americana show at Soda Bar. Riley Downing, who's a songwriter from Missouri, is coming with locals Alex Bergen and Justin John Rodriguez, who just put out this new single. It's called Fireflies in Dust with Alex Zanova, who's singing too. And the hope of a child running fast through these hills never broke my stride. Couldn't be that way again. Still makes me smile. Well, there is so much to check out in San Diego. Something for everyone. You can find details on these and more arts events or sign up for Julia's weekly KPBS Arts newsletter at kpbs.org/arts. I've been speaking with KPBS Arts producer Julia Dixon Evans. Great stuff, Julia. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jade. More than just another crowd, we lost our voices. It was worth all the fuss.
That's our show for today. If you missed anything, you can download KPBS Midday Edition on all podcast apps. Don't forget to watch Evening Edition tonight at 5 for in-depth reporting on San Diego issues. The Roundtable is here tomorrow at noon. But before I go, I'd like to thank our Midday Edition team, producers Ashley Rush, Juliana Domingo, and Jacob Ayer, with the help of Lainey Alfaro. Senior producer Brooke Ruth. Arts segment contributors Julia Dixon Evans and Beth Accomando. Technical producers Ben Redlosk, Brandon Trufa, and Rebecca Chacone. The Midday Edition theme music is from San Diego's own Surefire Souls Ensemble. Also, before we go, I really want to thank everyone who joined us for our midday experience. Thanks for your support. It's because of you that we do what we do. I'm Jade Hindman. Thanks for listening, and make it a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the Del Mar Wine and Food Festival, happening October 2nd to 7th. Founded in partnership with Alex Morgan, Drew Brees, and Rob Machado, the festival gathers chefs from San Diego and national TV, plus athletes and culture icons. Tickets at delmar.wine.